No one writes a long novel alone, and I would like to take a moment of your time to thank some of the people who helped with this one. G. Everett McCutcheon of Hamden Academy for his practical suggestions and encouragement. Dr. John Pearson of Old Town, Maine, medical examiner of Penobscot County and member in good standing of that most excellent medical specialty, general practice. Father Renald Halley of St. John's Catholic Church in Bangor, Maine, and of course my wife, whose criticism is as tough and unflinching as ever. Although the towns surrounding Salem's Lot are very real, Salem's Lot exists wholly in the author's imagination, and any resemblance between the people who live there and the people who live in the real world is coincidental and unintended. I first read Dracula when I was 9 or 10. Around 1957, this would have been. I can't remember why I wanted to read it, something some kid at school had said, or perhaps some vampire movie on John Zacherly's Shock Theater, but I did, and my mother brought it home from the Stratford Public Library and passed it over without comment. My brother David and I were both precocious readers, and our mother encouraged us greatly by forbidding us only a little. Quite often, she would hand us a book one of us had requested, adding, "That's trash," in a tone which suggested she knew that the news wouldn't stop us, might, on the contrary, actually encourage us. Besides, she knew that trash has its place. To Nellie Ruth Pillsbury King, The Blackboard Jungle was trash. The Bat, by Mary Roberts Reinhardt, was trash. The Amboy Dukes, by Irving Shulman, was serious trash. None of these books were forbidden to us, however. A very few others were. These our mother described as bad trash, and Dracula wasn't one of them. The only three in that category I can remember for sure were Peyton Place, King's Row, and Lady Chatterley's Lover. I had read all of these by the age of 13 and enjoyed them all. But none of them could match Bram Stoker's novel of old horrors colliding with modern technology and investigative techniques. That one was in a class by itself. I remember that Stratford Library book clearly and with great affection. It had that comfortably sprung, lived-in look that library books with a lively circulation always get. Bent page corners, a dab of mustard on page 331, a whiff of some reader's spilled after-dinner whiskey on page 468. Only library books speak with such wordless eloquence of the power good stories hold over us, how good stories abide, unchanged and mutely wise, while we poor humans grow older and slower. "You might not like it," my mother said. "It looks like nothing but letters to me." Dracula was my first encounter with the epistolary novel, as well as one of my earlier forays into adult fiction, and turned out to be comprised not just of letters, but of diary entries, newspaper cuttings, and Dr. Seward's exotic phonograph diary kept on wax cylinders. And after the original strangeness of reading such a patchwork wore off, I loved the form. There was a kind of justified snoopiness to it, which exerted tremendous appeal. I loved the story, too. There were plenty of frightening sections. Jonathan Harker's growing realization that he has been imprisoned in the Count's castle, the bloody staking of Lucy Westenra in her tomb, the burning of Mina Murray Harker's forehead with the holy wafer. But what I responded to most strongly, I was only 9 or 10, remember, was the intrepid band of adventurers which takes off in blind, brave pursuit of Count Dracula, hounding him first out of England, then back to Europe, and finally to his native Transylvania, where the issue is resolved at sunset. When I discovered J.R.R. Tolkien's Rings trilogy 10 years later, I thought, shit, this is just a slightly sunnier version of Stoker's Dracula, with Frodo playing Jonathan Harker, Gandalf playing Abraham Van Helsing, and Sauron playing the Count himself. I think Dracula was the first fully satisfying adult novel I had ever read, and I suppose it is no surprise that it marked me so early and so indelibly. A year or two later, by this time my mother and my brother and I had left Connecticut and moved back to